Okay. Huh? Good. Okay. Good. And how about the others?
Happy.
Happy. Very good. Yeah, you wait until we continue with the text. Okay, so we continue with the text. We go, I think, until 5 or 5:30, or what is it? 5. 5, then we have... Yeah, until 5, then we have another break, half hour. We do Tongleng meditation, and then it's dinner, and then in the evening we do Vajrasattva, okay? To purify. So we have arrived, we're still with this 2B or 2A, whatever. Well, yeah, anyway, second point there with the conventional bodhicitta. And we are where it says concerning the three objects, three poisons, and three virtues. Okay? So these are the things that would hinder us to practice bodhicitta. So the three objects are pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. The three poisons. Here, mine it says poisons. What does it say in yours? Does it also say poisons? Poison. Also poisons? No, but mine is there's a mistake. It says poisons, not poisons. It doesn't matter. So the three poisons are, of course, what is connected with these three objects. Is attachment, aversion. It's more aversion when it's an unpleasant object, and indifference. With the neutral object. And the three virtues would be the opposite. Like, I remember having had an argument with Tsippi when she said non-attachment is not a mind state. So, the three mind states, the three virtues are non-attachment, non-aversion, and non-confusion. Those are the three virtues here. Non-attachment. No. It's like a neutral mind, totally clear mind. Okay, the three virtues, yeah. Non-attachment, non-aversion, and non-confusion. In relationship with these objects, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Because the pleasantness will stay, the unpleasantness will also stay, and the neutrality will also stay. So we have to develop a mind that before we go into love and I don't know what, you know, we have to go into... a neutral mind, a clear mind, a mind that is free from these three poisons, non-attachment, non-aversion, or non-aggression, whatever, and non-confusion. Or you could call it clarity also, if you prefer. If you prefer a positive word than a negative word, you can call it clarity, the one with the indifference. Because that's how we react towards objects. And all of these minds, the three mind states, they are kind of negative. They're not seeing what is really there. Because attachment exaggerates the positive sides, thus can't see the negative side. Aversion exaggerates the negative side, can't see the positive side. And indifference doesn't see anything. Indifference is when you look at the person with indifference, you see a lump of flesh. You don't see a person with feelings who wants to be happy and doesn't want to suffer. So this is what we have to train. The instruction to be followed in brief is to take these words to heart in all activities. Okay? So these practices support your development of bodhicitta. Because whenever there is attachment, whenever there is aversion, whenever there is indifference, there is definitely no bodhicitta. Okay? And these are the things we can really pay attention to. You know, actually, bodhicitta, like this wish to benefit all sentient beings, it's the nature of our mind. So we don't need to go so much into there. But what we have to really pay attention to is what is hindering us from having bodhicitta. Yeah, it's the self-cherishing, you know, this grasping at the self, then cherishing it, and then that creates then these three categories.
When you say pleasant in this connection, pleasant, unpleasant,
a pleasant feeling. Where do pleasant feelings come from? I'm not talking about those. When you eat something and you have a pleasant feeling, well, it's very simple, you know. I mean, don't go so complicated. Daily life. Where do pleasant feelings come from? What's the cause? Huh? No. Karma. Positive karma. Positive karma. Positive karmic imprint ripening. A pleasant feeling. That's the cause for it. But we grasp at it and we think it comes from the object. This is what we have to see. This is what we have to do. This is what we have to work with. Then you can go with your wisdom, okay? Then you can say, okay, it looks as if the pleasant feeling is coming from the ice cream. But it's coming from my mind. It's my mind experiencing a pleasant feeling, yeah? The ice cream is not the real cause. It's the condition. It's not that the ice cream has nothing to do with it. Don't go that far. That's going too far, okay? The ice cream is the condition, and because other people have a good connection with ice cream, then it creates a pleasant feeling. If you have a toothache, or if you know that it will create a lot of stomach problems or whatever, then the base for the pleasant feeling is the ice cream. That's the base, not the cause, but the base. You need an object in order to have a pleasant feeling. Okay?
But I don't understand the whole connection. I don't understand this whole guy. The whole connection. I don't understand what it says.
What do you mean you don't understand?
Concerning the three objects,
three poisons and the three virtues, those are these, you know. The instructions to be followed in brief is to take these words to heart in all activities. Be careful of these three things. Because that is covering up our bodhicitta. Because bodhicitta is like love, compassion is... No, I mean, again, you know, try to, you know, like, you have these three things that happen, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. They create attachment, aversion, indifference. What do? You try to change this into non-attachment, non-aversion, and clarity. That's what it means. Maybe not such in such clear words, but this is what he's telling us. That's what we have to pay attention to. Okay? Is it clearer now or not? Is it clearer or is it still not? What it has to do here... Which one?
When you say no attachment is something it feels automatically attached to.
Mm-hmm.
Saying no attachment is something.
This is, you know, Benny, this is what we are trying to in the mindfulness meditation, sometimes to really notice mind free from attachment, also free from love. Because that's what we're trying to, a clear mind which is free from all these things. That is what we're trying to generate. That's what we're trying to do.
Talk about the word no, how we perceive the no. We can adjust it, we can actually work with the word no attachment as something
that... Would it work if you say free from attachment, if you use three words? Okay. A mirror that is dirty, okay? The dirt is attachment, aversion, indifference. Then you get rid of that. What is the mirror then? Free from dirt. Where's the problem? I don't see where the problem is. Already Zippy had the problem like many years ago with that non-attachment thing. Is it clearer now? Mind free from attachment?
My question was different.
Okay. Yeah.
Then he says, be mindful. Okay, in these four lines, it says what are the objects we are talking about, attachment, non-attachment, and so forth. Be mindful.
Mm-hmm.
What is the connection with developing bodhicitta?
Mm-hmm.
It's good to be mindful, I know.
The connection is if you have attachment, aversion, and ignorance, these three mind states cover the nature of the mind. This would be, no, if you have this, you cannot have bodhicitta because you exclude people. You see, bodhicitta is all sentient beings. It's not just having a nice feeling towards some people.
So maybe, would it be right to say that this is the step for equanimity even before we start?
Could be, yeah. Exactly. This, to see what is hindering us. You know, I mean, you can also, maybe to make it more clear, you can say people that we're attached to, are we holding them too close? Others we hold them too different? Others we're totally indifferent? And like this. But sometimes it's easier with objects, to work with objects also. That, you know, we see that the object creates a pleasant feeling, therefore immediately attachment. And when there's attachment, there is always kind of, somehow deep down we know this will never be enough, it will not last, and all this. And then it's the chase for more pleasant feelings. Yeah? Okay? Like, the moment any of these mind states is there, there is no open heart. There is no. There is, you know. There is no clarity. There is, how to say? It's distorted. It's exaggerating the good side. It's exaggerating the negative sides, like that. And this is a big hindrance for bodhicitta. Yeah, well, you have to. We will write a letter to Geshe Chekhov and say, please, can you make another order here, because it's like this. Maybe, you know, it could also be, let's try to figure out. Okay, he starts with the instructions how to develop bodhicitta. We start to practice. All of a sudden we see it doesn't work. Now he tells us, this is why it doesn't work, because you're still stuck in this attachment, aversion, and indifference. I mean, the text itself, you know, I mean, it's like, it gets worse afterwards. You read things, you go like, what on earth does that mean? I don't know if you read the text. You know, if we wouldn't have commentary, we wouldn't even know the meaning of what he means to say. Then forget about explanation on it. You know, then we have to try to figure it out. Yes, TP.
I have a problem with the
one. Which one? Okay, call it clarity. No, the feelings are still there, but with the clarity, you see that they're impermanent. What the causes are, they're not. It's the ice cream or the person is just the base. That's what you would see with... No. You understand the nature of it. Empty of inherent existence, dependent arising, coming because I have positive karma now with the ice cream or with the person. You know, a Buddha has feelings, pleasant, unpleasant, but he's not attached to it nor averse to it because he sees that both are equal in being impermanent. And that pleasant feelings are not the cause for happiness, I mean, in a Buddha's mind anyway, and unpleasant feelings are also not the cause for unhappiness. You see, if pleasant... What was that? Pleasant feelings would be the cause for attachment, we could never experience contentment. Because with pleasant feelings, we can also experience contentment. Saying, oh, thank you very much. Like, you know, when you say appreciation is a form of contentment. If you appreciate getting something from somebody and there's real appreciation, there is no need for more. It's being content. Unpleasant feelings can be a base for developing patience. If we never have any unpleasant feelings, we will never develop patience.
That's why I don't.
Yes.
Can you say some more words about the object function?
Okay. To see first, to ask yourself, how does it appear? Like a person comes and you have this let's say aversion. Aversion sometimes is easier to develop. You see somebody and immediately there's aversion. Then you ask yourself, how does it appear? It appears the person is truly, solidly unpleasant. That's how it appears. Then you ask yourself, is that possible? Because maybe at one point, you know, the person was in front of me. I didn't know the person. I had no feelings whatsoever. Has the person changed so much in this short time? Then the mind, you know, the self-grasping, self-cherishing goes, no, but they did this to me, or they're doing that, or doing that. They did that before, but you didn't know, you know. And then to really start to see, oh, but some other people like this person. So it cannot be that this person is just unpleasant, you know, like this. And the same with attachment. And to see also, not so much, actually you don't work so much with the object. You work with your mind. You try to bring the mind, you know, the awareness, because as long as the mind is with the object itself, if you just keep there, it cannot see anything else but unpleasantness. You can try to argue and this and this and this. Then when you come inside like aversion, how does it feel? And you stay with that. How does my aversion feel? Then it feels, it's quite unpleasant. Oh, I want to have peace of mind. Can I have peace of mind with this unpleasant feeling in the heart? Then maybe, again, if you go to the object, you think, oh, the person is not here anymore, but just the thought about the person is bringing up this unpleasant feeling. How can that be, you know? Because as long as the mind is with the object, it does, what is that called again? Inappropriate attention. Like, it is glued to the object and it reaffirms to itself that this is either pleasant or unpleasant. Because if the mind would really totally stay there without any arguments, it would probably, the mind would go into neutrality. This is why if you want to start to eat less, have only one thing on your plate and not different things. Because if you only have one thing, very quickly it gets boring and you're not interested anymore. But what we do, what attachment is doing, it jumps from one taste to the other, so then always the taste is new, okay? You can make that experience, you can try out. Or to really see how take something in a plate that you like very much and you start eating and you go like, wow, really good and happy feeling, okay? Then second one, wow, yes, good. To really see if the pleasant feeling stays the same or if it changes. And for that you have to watch the mind and not the object, yeah? So mindfulness is always, awareness is always from away from the object, inside to the mind. But our mind wants to go outside, and this is what we're doing all the time. We're very extroverted people. We're constantly outside. This is why deep down we really are convinced that it's the outer world who is making us happy or unhappy. We don't even see that in order to be happy and in order to protect ourselves from unhappiness, we use two mind states that by themselves destroy the peace of mind. Attachment always comes with knowing that it will not be enough, knowing I will need more, knowing that it will end. So there is fear of loss, right? So that's not a peaceful state of mind. And of course, aversion is not a peaceful state of mind. You cannot, when you have aversion or anger, you cannot enjoy anything. I think there is something about joy. In that point, we will talk about the causes for joy. So it's quite amazing, especially if you have aversion, how the mind, you feel that your thoughts, they can't stop thinking about this object or about this situation. It's impossible, you know. So then in order to change the object, you go, then the object of your observation becomes your mind state. Yeah. Or as I said, if you have anger, don't stop there. Don't judge yourself. Don't think you're bad because you're angry. Try to go beyond and look why. Not there, but here. Why? What needs have not been fulfilled? Yeah. Because then you are looking at another object, and then the mind calms down. Because what is that mind that looks inside at myself, what has not been fulfilled? How would you call such a mind? What name would you give such a mind? I get angry, and I can have anger against my anger. Yeah, that is the same. Or I could, you know, go beyond the anger and look, what needs have not been fulfilled? What kind of mind is that? What mind state? How would you call it? Huh? Compassion. Compassion. You're interested in yourself of being well. Like compassion, when Sipi says, I'm not well, I ask her, what's the matter? So it's the same thing. When you go beyond anger inside and you ask yourself, hey, what's the matter? What is wrong? That's compassion. Wanting to do, loving kindness, compassion, wanting to do something. And that, of course, feels much better. This is why then the anger dies down very quickly. Because you're not with the outside object anymore that makes you angry, but you are what needs are not fulfilled. And then we can start analyzing. Yeah, and then we can go like, well, you know, needs not fulfilled. Everybody's needs get sometimes not fulfilled. No need to make such a big deal out of it. We can't go around asking everybody to fulfill our needs. You know, that would be asking a little bit too much. And then we change. And then we go, how about if I start to fulfill the needs of others? I cannot force others to fulfill my needs. But what I can do, I can start to try to fulfill their needs. And then your mind changes totally. So it's quite a good thing, actually. Is that more or less clear why that it's here and what it means? Now, exactly why it is here, I never asked that question anybody. Also, I didn't have many commentaries. I think I only had one, and it was very, very quick, you know. But I read the commentary of Geshe-la Thupten's Mit allem verbunden. Tippi, you have two commentaries there. Why don't you look up in Nam Kapel what he says about that point? Huh? Everybody has it, yeah, but you also have it. I don't have it. Huh? If it offers more, you know, the book, Nam Kapel's commentary on the 7 points, if it offers more, maybe it offers more explanation, I don't know. You see, this is another thing in me. I'm not so thorough as you. I'm not kind of going, why this, that? So when you ask me these questions, I go, why are they asking these things? It's like, huh? I'm not saying you shouldn't ask these questions. Huh? Suggestion. Okay?
Just an idea.
Yeah. No, how to practice is not how to develop. How to practice, okay? Yeah.
And the last is the following the practice, just being mindful to these three poisons while practicing.
Yeah, that's what I thought from the beginning.
It took some time to reach this.
Oh, good. And then here, mine in German. Sometimes it's good to have different translations, also different languages, or even different same language translation. So then it says here, it says, the instructions to be followed in brief is to take these words to heart in all activities. Here it says, this is a... this I didn't see. So see, Germans are very thorough. So it says three objects, three poisons, three roots of virtue, three roots of virtue. Ist die kurze Zusammenfassung der Unterweisung. This is the short essence, or you know, when you put things together, for the instructions, what to do after the session. Voila, we got it. So in the session, you practice bodhicitta. Out of the session, your mind again goes, your senses go to all the objects. And then that's what you have to pay attention to. Good thing we have the Germans. Ay, 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 ay. Yeah. Because here it doesn't say anything. It's just the instruction to be followed in brief is to take these words to heart in all activities. Okay. And then here I have one that is added also. Maybe it's in your Hebrew. Über dich in allem, was du tust, mit Worten. Kind of, in everything you train, use words to inspire you. You know, quotes, words. When the six senses come into contact with the six objects, such as those that are attractive, unattractive, or neutral, if the three corresponding poisons or disturbing emotions arise, sincerely train your mind. By these means, I have cut off all the disturbing emotions of all the many beings overpowered by them in this world. May they thus abide in virtue and be freed from the three poisons. So that would be the words that you're using. Into the when you after the session.
They take it into the practice, not the session, because they say even here music concerning all
sentient beings, exactly in the bodhicitta practice. Practice this in all activities, whether standing, strolling, lying, or sitting, and at all times, whether day or night. Then Kamala Shila says to that, the great compassionate one in all his actions, whether walking or standing, and at all times must acquaint himself with all sentient beings, such a thought should be complemented by reciting the following lines. May their misdeeds, this is Tongleng, right? May their misdeeds ripen upon me, and may all my virtues ripen on them. May all sentient beings' sufferings mature on me, and through my virtues may they all be happy. Whatever agonies beings may suffer, may they ripen on me alone. Through all the virtues of bodhisattvas, may wandering beings enjoy bliss. This must be practiced from the depths of your heart. So that would be, you know, doing some kind of tongleng even outside of the session. Okay, good, thank you. So we're here. So in case we need to consult Nam Kapel again, I'll keep it here, okay? So then, yeah, use words in order to inspire yourself. Don't know why you don't have it here. I have another English version. Is it in the Hebrew version, this thing about use words to inspire you? Okay, so here it just says, there are three objects, three poisons and three sources of virtue. Three objects, agreeable, disagreeable, neutral experiences, three poisons, attachment, aversion, and delusion, three roots of virtue, non-attachment, equanimity, and wisdom. So instead of anger, they use equanimity, if you prefer that. But they do, and wisdom. Wisdom is for indifference. That those are the three roots of virtue. I have just like words, and then again, we can try to figure it out. Remember this by repeated recollection, and here also it says, practice every activity by these words. Okay. We're not... The practice of this slogan is to take the passion, aggression, and delusion of others upon ourselves so that they may be freed and undefiled. Passion is wanting to magnetize or possess. Aggression is wanting to reject, attack, cast out. And ignorance or indifference is that you couldn't be bothered, you are not interested. A kind of anti-prajna energy. It's very dull, yeah? Indifference is very dull. Sometimes we think that's equanimity. Well, I don't care. Everything is impermanent and everything is empty. Who cares? You know, it's going to finish anyway. That is using the Dharma like poison. If you use it like this. Yeah, you have to be careful when you use these wise words, what it produces in your mind. So that it's true, everything is empty and everything is impermanent, but that's not creating the state of clarity that you want to have, like awake and clear. Okay? So this slogan is connected with the post-meditation experience, which comes after the main practice. when we reflect on our enemy that inspires aggression, whether aggression or whatever aggression our enemy has provided for us, let that aggression be ours and let the enemy thereby be free from any kind of aggression. Okay, so it goes even further than that. Like when somebody is, when you have aversion towards somebody and that person has aversion towards you, since you already have aversion, you also, or aggression, you also take the aggression of the enemy. So that's very high. You know, sometimes what we do in Tongleng, when we take somebody that we dislike, we look at all the things we dislike in that person, and then we take it upon us. You know, all the things that get on our case, all the things that make us nervous, then we take this upon us, and then that, then we feel the ego go, no, I don't want to become like him. Yeah. And then we have to calm the ego down and say, no, it's not that I become like him, it's that he is free of these things that get on my nerves. That's very difficult. Because I'm so much better than this person, you know. And then we see the fear that, you know, again, we're more concerned about us than about the other when we do Tongleng. Thank you for that. That's great. So now it's really clear. Thank you for your question also. I didn't think it would go that deep. So it's great. Thank you. Whatever passion has been created by our friends, let us take that neurosis into ourselves and let our friends be freed from passion. And the indifference of those who are in the middle or unconcerned, those who are ignorant, deluded, or non-caring, let us bring that neurosis into ourselves and let those people be free from ignorance. Whenever any of these three poisons happens in your life, you should do the sending and taking practice. You should look at your passion, your aggression, and your delusion, and do not regard them as problem or as promise. Instead, when you are in a state of aggression, you say, may this aggression be a working base for me. May I learn to hold my aggression to myself, and may all sentient beings thereby attain freedom from aggression. Or may this passion be mine, because it belongs to me by virtue of my holding on to it. Therefore, may others be free of such passion. For indifference, you do the same thing. The purpose of doing that is that when you begin to hold the three poisons as yours, when you possess them fully and completely, when you take charge of them fully, you will find, interestingly enough, that the logic is reversed. If you have no object of aggression, you cannot hold your own aggression purely by yourself. That's interesting. If you have no object of passion, you cannot hold your passion to yourself. Yeah. And in the same way, you cannot hold on to your ignorance either. By holding your poison, you let go of the object or the intent of your poison. You see, what usually happens is that you have objects of the three poisons. When you have an object of aggression, for example, you feel angry towards it. But if your anger is not directed towards something, the object of aggression falls apart. It is impossible to have an object of anger because that anger belongs to you rather than to its object. You give your compassion, so this is kind of what I said. You take the mind away from the object and you look at your own anger. That is your only object that you're looking at, is your anger. Yeah. You feel angry to, yeah? So it is impossible to have an object of anger because the anger belongs to you rather than to its object. Because it's true, anger is in the mind. It's not coming from the object. So all these projections we start to see when we look at these three things. Because if you start to be mindful during the day, this is how we react to everything. I like, I dislike, I don't care. So can you imagine how much non-virtue we practice every day, we create every day? How much delusions we create every day? So this is why then afterwards, when it says encourage yourself with words, you know, learn quotes, or think like just this, may all suffering ripen upon me, may all happiness ripen upon others. Just that, for example. It is impossible to know. You give your compassion to the object so that it doesn't provoke your anger, then what are you angry with? You find yourself just hanging out there with no one to project onto. Therefore, you can cut the root of the three poisons by dealing with others rather than by dealing with yourself. So an interesting twist takes place. Okay? Keep this also. Okay, keep this also. Maybe you should just read from that, you know. Might be easier. Might be much easier, and then you get better information also. Yeah, I think because what I give you is so confusing that then there's questions coming up, okay? Then we can clarify the questions with that. So I'm the one, my role is to make you confused so that you have questions and then we try to figure them out with the text. Okay. Then, next one, transforming adverse circumstances into the path to enlightenment. That's the third point, okay? When environment and its inhabitants overflow with unwholesomeness, transform adverse circumstances into the path to enlightenment. How can we do that? Because, you know, we want to have a peaceful environment, we want to be well, we want to have what we want. Are you with me still? It's number three. The third point, transforming adverse circumstances into the path to enlightenment. When things are really difficult, what increases in us? Something that is essential for our path to enlightenment. What increases in us when things are really difficult, almost by itself? A positive thing? Not by itself. Renunciation. Really looking at samsara and saying, you know, okay, adverse circumstances. Well, you know, where's my childish mind now? My childish mind wants to stay in samsara without any effort, you know, not making effort to get out of it, and wants to have it the way it wants to have it. And then we see that we look at the First Noble Truth. You know, Buddha said, everything is in the... It didn't say everything is suffering, by the way. It didn't say life suffering. It said everything is in the nature of suffering. Everything that our mind, which is touching these objects with these three poisons, at one point turns sour, creates suffering, you know. Pleasure creates suffering when it ends, because there's the wish for more. And we get dependent on these things. And very often they have side effects, yeah. And when we consume an object with attachment, thinking that the contentment will come from the object, this is why we have to keep consuming, because it's not true. Contentment is in the mind. And what we mistake for contentment very often is we're fed up with it. So then we look for another object, and another one, and another one, and another one. So we'll circle in samsara looking for pleasant things and never really discovering that we could have peerless happiness. Because we're constantly looking in the wrong place. You know, like when you're looking for something and you're convinced that you put it there, but it's not there. But how many times do you go and look in the same spot? That's exactly what we do in samsara. We haven't given up hope. This is what Khandra Rinpoche said when she was in Switzerland, I think last year. She said, you Westerners, you know, you understand emptiness very quickly. You're very sharp, you know. But somehow, still you refuse to give up the hope that it still might be somewhere, this I, this me. You do not want to give up the hope that it could be somewhere. And it's true. Huh? Yeah, it seems, she said, you Westerners. Or maybe we are just the ones who are very sharp and understand quickly, whereas with Tibetans, you know, you have to explain many times. Maybe, but both maybe don't give up hope, I don't know. But this is how she said it. So like that. So that really increases, it's like our renunciation, wanting to get out of it, having enough. You know, starting to work with the first and the second noble truth. Yeah, to see as long as I have this dualistic mind, which then is pervaded by these three poisons, and I give the four, you know, like, and I'm totally fascinated by these objects, I will not, there will be adverse conditions. I will not, never find the peace I want to find. And, you know, we know how it is. Of course, the situation here in Israel now is really difficult. So you think that if you would live in Switzerland, you wouldn't have any problems. Yeah, at the beginning, yes, but then some other problems come. Huh? Not really boring. Your neighbor will get on your nerves, or this, or too many refugees coming in, and even if they're peaceful, you still don't want them to be there because it's threatening your pension money or something like that, you know. The mind will always find something to be averse to and to be attached to. And as long as we are circling like this, yeah, no. So when things go well, you know how it is when things go well. Is it then that you really feel I want to practice and I want to meditate? Exactly. Then we want to go out and have fun. Enjoy, you know, there's not so many times the mind is free and is happy. So then we want to go out and parade it on the Yarkon promenade there, you know, where everybody sees us, how well we are. Look at me, I am so well. We want everybody to see us. Then when we're not so well, we hide at home, you know, in the closet. So imagine if we would be our own parents. The kids, when they're doing well, they're polite, they're quiet, and this, we go and take them out and show them to everybody. When they're not quiet, we kind of lock them in the cupboard. That's what we do with ourselves, isn't it? So difficult for us to admit that I'm not well in a sober way, you know, just especially people that we are afraid that don't respect us or something like that. You know, can we be really open with everybody and say, no, I'm not well? Or like I say, you know, I'm losing my memory or these kind of things. Can we do that? Usually not. We like to show ourselves when we're happy and when we're well. Makes us arrogant. Whereas suffering, oh, I can't remember who said it, it's in the Lamrim somewhere. Suffering is the best broom for arrogance. And with arrogance, you cannot learn anything. You don't make progress on the path. That's the problem also with arrogance. Okay?
You mentioned here the practice of renunciation when difficulties arise. Is that the meaning here, renunciation only, or any practice?
I think any practice, you know, getting out of, it says, I mean, this is pretty clear, you know, we don't need to run to the masters all the time also. When the environment and its habitants of flow with wholesomeness transform adverse circumstances into the path to enlightenment. So it's clear, whatever, it can be Tong Leng, it can be this, but again, you know, renunciation is so important, and it is the first step it's a very important step on this path to enlightenment. Of course, bodhicitta is much more inspiring because we want to do it for all sentient beings. But we need to also say for ourselves, you know. But again, this is not real renunciation. But it is then that we, when it's adverse, at least I can say, okay, now at least I have some renunciation, I go and sit and practice. But it's not what renunciation is all about. We want to renounce all of samsara, also the good things. Yeah. So we need to think about the tree sufferings as we did last night. We thought about, as long as we have this all-pervasive condition suffering, we will be in samsara, maybe in very, very high states. And of course, you know, you think, oh, if I'm in these very high states, that will be good enough. But the problem is when you're in these high states, you forget that you have been sitting in Israel when there was these problems going on. And then, you know, there you won't be troubled by aversion and attachment. But you will not create more positive karma, more merit, when you are just absorbed in these very high absorptions. So this is why from the beginning we want to get out of samsara. We don't want to go just to these higher states. But then, therefore, also in your daily practice is really good when you sit down to meditate. that you're not expecting it to be pleasant, for example. But it comes very automatically. The time I spend in meditation should be pleasant. Don't you have this attitude? Yeah. So this is the craving for pleasant feelings. And that's not going to get us out of samsara. The craving, when you sit down for meditation, you should say, and I'm having the same craving, yeah, by the way. So the craving should be like, for the sake of knowledge, knowing what? Knowing impermanence, knowing suffering, knowing emptiness. That's why we meditate, not to have pleasant feelings. Yeah, but this comes very automatically, you know, because it's effort. So when we have to apply effort, at least we want some reward. Otherwise, it's not worthwhile. You know this whole thing when they did with the kids with these two marshmallows, that or one, they gave them one, and they said, you can either eat it now, or you can eat it, you can just stay with it, and when if you're able to stay with it, you'll get two at the end. Have you ever seen it? Oh, it's really sweet. I mean, and it's been repeated quite, I think, many times. They made this in Stanford. So very small kids, you know, because they know that they will get two at the end, they can stay with it. Some others, I think the sweetest is the brother and sister. So there's the older brother and the little sister. So the little sister, she looks, then she takes it, she smells it, then she licks it. And he says, I'm going to wait. And she says, yeah, I'll wait too. And she, you know. She licks it. It's so sweet. It's exactly us, you know, thinking we're doing the right thing, but by the way, we're eating. And then she starts biting into it and this and that. And you see the faces of these kids who are looking at this marshmallow, you know. I mean, it is so sweet. And this is us. So whenever there is reward, then we can endure, yeah. But I think if you want pleasure in the meditation, it really limits it to what else it could be, you know, because it will give you good feelings after a while. If you're good at concentration, you'll have blissful states. So be happy if you don't have them, because very quickly you get attached to that. And then you meditate for that, you know. Like for example, if you have when you do a longer a retreat with Sean, longer silent retreat, I'm sure you have sessions where it goes really well. Yeah, by now. Yes? Yeah. So then the mind goes, you know, I'll do this for the rest of my life. And then the next session is probably the worst that you've ever had because you pushed too hard. You know, because we don't know how to relax properly. And then we start to think, oh, before this last session, did I have a cup of tea or did I have coffee? Was it before lunch? Was it after lunch? You know, kind of we try to create the outside conditions to have the same experience again. And then all we do in the meditation is looking for that experience. And then it will never come back. Yeah? But it's normal. This is why they talk in the texts about this, because everybody is doing it. Okay? Yeah. Oh, I wish I had more attachment for that. What's the definition of attachment, or what's the definition of illusion? I shouldn't have used the word craving, I know, but yeah. What are delusions? The causes for suffering. Wisdom and compassion, will that be a cause for suffering? So is it craving? Is it a delusion? Is it the same as craving for just ordinary happiness that we know that will end? Okay. So, yeah, I shouldn't have used the word craving. It's okay. But craving is quite strong. So we should... A yearning. Yeah, you prefer yearning? Yeah. But, you know, yearning again. Yearning for me is it's a pulling, but it's quite a passive mind state to just wait, you know, until maybe then something comes that I really want. Craving is very strong. Yeah? Craving is giving us a lot of good energy. So again, the mind itself here is maybe not so much the problem, is more what you want. So craving for worldly pleasures, that creates suffering. But craving for wisdom and compassion, I mean, for bodhicitta, how can that create suffering? I wonder, I really wonder. Huh? Yeah. Okay, because I wonder, because you see, the object is virtuous. So I wonder if it would create that. And as Leora says, you're craving for quick results and not for wisdom and compassion. Yeah. So it's sometimes it's good to apply, to use words that maybe are not the exact meaning from the philosophy, but speak to you. A yearning is nice, but yearning for me is passive. Whereas craving is like, you know, of course then you can go crazy with it also. So like that. So reflect immediately upon every opportunity. Like for example, every opportunity would be adverse conditions. You're not well. You say, oh, it's still numbered the third point. Okay? Still on the third point. Reflect immediately at every opportunity. When you feel yourself getting upset or whatever, then you could think, oh, suffering is really not good. May all beings be free from suffering. If you want to do Tonglen, you go, may all suffering ripen upon me right now. If you're fairly well and you're happy, instead of just enjoying the view and say, oh, this is so great, you say, may all beings enjoy that, whatever, you know, that kind of happiness. Even though I know it's only worldly happiness, but may they, because they know worldly happiness, may they, through the worldly happiness, attain the peerless happiness of liberation and enlightenment. Because if we don't know worldly happiness, we will most probably not attain enlightenment. You need to know worldly happiness. You need to have experienced it. Because just suffering is you cannot practice. The mind needs to have that space where it's from time to time is happy. This is why the human state is the best. Because it's not total happiness all the time, where you don't want to do anything because everything goes well. And it's not total suffering like the lower states. And it's not total dullness and ignorance like the animals who only want comfort. You know, they have some kind of intelligence, how to be comfortable. And then when they're comfortable, they're content. Many human minds are like this also. Yeah. So we don't want that. We want to go further. This is why it's good to look at worldly happiness, to have it, because it makes you relaxed. If people would be happier, we would have much less aggression in the world. You know, why is it that we have all these problems? Because people are unhappy. They're suffering. Yeah? So don't, you know, with this, the whole thing about worldly happiness, of course, you go like, you know, you shouldn't look for it. But when it comes, just be happy that it's there. And as I said, it doesn't have so much to do with the object. It has to do with your mind state, whether you experience a lot of happy moments. You know, like the cup is always half full or half empty. It really depends on your habitual way of looking at things. There are some people that only see the negative side of things. That's a trained mind who sees the negative side of things. You can also have people that spontaneously see the positive things. You know, that's how we use every opportunity in our daily life. And, you know, adverse circumstances. Why do they talk about adverse circumstances and not about happy circumstances? Because we're in samsara. Adverse circumstances, no matter where you are, will come. Unless you're in the form or in the formless realm. Yeah, there you just absorb. But we're still talking about the desire realm here. No matter where you are, you will encounter adverse circumstances. Not because of the circumstance outside, but because your mind has decided, this is not good for me. Yeah. And then when an adverse or difficult circumstance comes, then then you go like, great, I can practice patience. Like Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, if you really practice this mind training, you will love your problems like now you love ice cream. Because every moment is a moment where you can purify negative karma, where you can practice patience and compassion. So instead of seeing it as a hindrance, we see it as a help. Because you see, if somebody makes you so upset and angry and hurts you and all this, it can poison our life and we can be unhappy for the rest of our life. But this person can also, because finally we're fed up with that negative state of mind, finally we're fed up with being under the control of that person, even if the person is not here, then we say, I want to do something about this. You know? And we start to use these tools. It's my karma, it's my mind who is doing like this, and so forth. And then all of a sudden you see that, wow, it's possible. And that gives you a lot of confidence, thanks to that person who has treated you not the way you wanted to be treated. Yeah. Because you see, when somebody brings negative imprints to ripen, what are the four features of karma? Do you remember? Four characteristics of karma. Karma is definite. Karma is definite. Whatever you have not created, you cannot experience. It increases. And it cannot be destroyed by itself. Yeah? It doesn't lose its power. So, karma increases. While it is on our mind stream, the result grows. So when somebody harms you now, you go like, wow, good. Maybe we don't know, but you can use the word maybe. Maybe thanks to them, I'm not going to have a rebirth in the hell states. Because that negative imprint is ripened now. So what is the danger here? What is the danger in thinking like this? Had you become a doormat, okay, and you don't want to be that, like if somebody is abusing you physically or verbally or mentally, although I have to say the threshold for feeling abused has gone really low these days. You know, the other day somebody said, my partner, he didn't greet me in the morning, I feel like mentally abused. I said, well, okay. Did he speak to you in the afternoon? Yes. So I said, maybe you can let go, I think. No, he's abusing me. So, you know, I think we can also one of the signs of degenerate times, our egos become bigger, 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 meaning the target becomes bigger and bigger and bigger, meaning it leads very, very little things to make us upset and to feel abused, mentally, verbally, physically. But if somebody is really, abusing you, then go to the police. You know, if they're abusing you physically, go away. I mean, don't stay with them, saying, oh, fantastic, he's exhausting my negative karma. Because it's not good for the person either. Do it out of consideration for that person who is abusing you physically. If you have the mind of a bodhisattva and you see that it makes him happy to beat you and then he doesn't beat anybody else, stay there. But do you have such a mind? You know, again, it's like not to jump immediately. This is something that these very difficult steps and decisions we have to make, not to immediately jump and say, oh yes, I do it for his benefit, so then, you know, he's not harming me and he doesn't create negative karma. To really see the motivation, why am I going away? And then to just say, I'm too weak to stay here. I don't have bodhicitta, you know. I cannot bear it. But then not, you know, to really see also, if I have decided to be on the bodhisattva path, what I'm doing here now is not right. Not to make it right, that's what I mean. But to really measure where you are standing. basically, or I went to measure where she is standing by looking.
There's a smoke there, and it's...
Oui.
Look.
Yeah, then.
Not too much for a simple nectar.
Okay, so I could... So this is why, you know, it's like you have to be careful when you practice these things. And it's okay to say, I can't do it. I want to do this in the future. I want to be able to do this. You know, I mean, just being inspired by this is such a great thing. You should honor that. Just the wish to be able to do this is so rare in this world. So don't, you know, don't overestimate yourself. Don't beat yourself up by saying, oh, I'm too weak, I can't do it. Be wise also, okay? So that this is not destroying you. You know, there is, what is the comedy? There's a book, The Peacock in the Poison Grove. It's a commentary on the Wheel of Sharp Weapons. And you have to be quite strong to take it, because the Wheel of Sharp Weapons is like, it's an explanation why negative things happen to us. So it tells us you have done this, 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 this. In order not to feel guilty and not to get angry, say, why is he saying, wah, 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 you know, because we prefer to feed the victim than to have been the aggressor also in the past. So you have to be quite strong to eat it. So like the expression there also is like, Bodhisattva practice, like this one, is like poison for ordinary beings. It destroys them. But it's food for bodhisattvas on the path to enlightenment. Like poisonous plants that, I don't know if it's true, but it says, peacocks can eat poisonous plants and it nourishes them. If other birds eat those things, they die. Yeah. So here we're doing theory. Okay, and then if you're inspired by that, then you can slowly start giving away your seat on the train, if it's a half hour ride or something like that, and see how you feel when you give it away voluntarily. It shouldn't really matter how you feel, but for us unenlightened beings, we need these things, we need these rewards. It's like the second marshmallow that we need at the beginning, you know. We need to make the ego feel comfortable. We need to nourish the positive ego. Even that one also does not exist. If you start too quickly wanting to throw out all of it, we crash. And then when we're so well, and when the mind is so grown up and so strong, then we can discard of that positive ego as well. So it's really going in steps. Okay? Reflect immediately at every opportunity. Then the supreme method is accompanied by the four practices. Like here it says, reflect immediately upon every opportunity. In German it says, was dir auch im Moment begegnet, bring es mit der Meditation. Whatever you encounter, bring it in connection with your meditation. This is what the German commentary says, what the German text says.
To take into the meditation,
with your meditation practice, you know, go inside. Try to see the nature of the object, but then also how does this mind of aversion and whatever, da, 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 how does it feel? And the meditation would be probably in this case, Tonglen. Bring it in connection with practicing Tonglen. Then this says the Ausstattung mit den vier Folgen ist besser. The best method is these four, the four practices. So they are very Tibetan. Okay, so the four practices are. Where are they? Yeah, accumulating merit exactly, and. Huh. Purifying negative karma, that's what we'll do tonight. Harming. Offering to the hindering spirits, and kind of telling the Dharma, the protectors to do their job. by also making dharmas or practices or whatever. Yeah. So the first two we understand, okay? Accumulating merit, because if we want to be happy, we need to have positive energy. Mitzvahs, or, you know, like this. Or prostrations, or making altar, making nice offerings, generating faith and trust in the three jewels, these kinds of things. All this is creating virtue. And then purifying negative karma, this also we understand. They're making offerings to the harming spirits, feeding the demons. And then there is so-called dharma protectors. Like there was like spirits who are very powerful, and they have been subdued by Padmasambhava or other, you know, Machiklapcha, and by other very powerful beings in ancient Tibet. And then they promised to use their power to protect people who practice the Dharma, like Mahakala and Palden Lamo and all these guys who look pretty awful and very wrathful. Okay? So there's Mahakala practices, like, you know, or tea offering, Dharma offering, like this. The harming spirits, this is what I'm doing every evening. It's like burning a mixture of flour and butter, you know, the three whites and the three sweets. Yeah, it's very traditional. It's like butter, milk, and yogurt, and then honey, molasses, and white sugar. And so that's a mixture, so I burn it. And then it is for these people who, for these spirits who live off smell, okay? So that's for those to smell. But as I'm doing this, I transform it into emptiness, and then I let it arise as whatever beings need or want, so that they're satisfied, okay? So these harming spirits, we can either try to destroy them, or we can try to make them content. No, because they're inside. Yeah.
Yeah, but without the evil spirits, you will not have the good one. You will not understand or feel or need the good one. Because you need this evil and the good.
I don't think so. I don't agree with that. I don't think I need evil to understand kindness. No, don't think so. Don't think so. So, but we're talking really about energies that can hinder us. And that can be inner energies, and that can be outer energies. You know, the Tibetans, they have this system when you go into Tantra, where you have like channels that our deities are sitting there and on different places and all this, that actually our body would be a pure land, a mandala, and things like that. And then when these energies are out of control, nervous system. Okay? When our nervous system is out of control, then the mind also is not well. So they didn't know about nervous systems and things like that, so they had the outside spirits. So by trying to pacify outside spirits, what happens to us? I know I've done everything to pacify them, therefore I can relax, you know. And every time I do this in the evening, I mean, I'm doing it when it's not too, like I'm not doing it in cities or things like that, or when at my sister-in-law's place, I would never do it. She would think now she's gone totally gaga. But I do it in Bern in the center. I do it here also. Like here, it doesn't disturb anybody. It's burnt. It smells like burnt bread, burnt toast. Burnt toast. Yeah, but it's burnt. And if people are doing barbecue also, then nobody notices it anyway. And so there's a practice that goes with it. So you kind of, you burn these things, and that attracts them, because they're hungry, they're unsatisfied, they're greedy. Yeah. So then while they're there eating, whatever you have visualized in whatever beautiful things they want to need, you give them dharma. So you read some verses from the first chapter of the Bodhicaryavatara, the benefits of bodhicitta. You read three chapters. I mean, it's always the same three chapters, but you can also read other things. You give them dharma at the same time while they're there eating. So, you know, I don't know, but I know Ninje. Ninje is a nun who's done two four-year retreats or something like that, okay? So she's also doing that. And she said, at one point, she said, I saw them. I really saw them being there around that fire. I don't think she lies. I think our mind is too solidified to notice these things. Yeah, and you probably see them also. And what was, if you have single point of concentration, it was really interesting. We had one woman who turned up in Dharamsala who was sent by her Hindu master, and she had trained shamatha with him, and she had a high level of concentration. So she came to an initiation by Dema Lodzsa Rinpoche, and she didn't know what this was all about, and it's all in Tibetan, okay? So, you know, when you before an initiation, you do the gektor, you have these three little cakes that are being carried outside, and this is to draw all the hindering spirits out so that you can do your work properly, okay? Gektor, it's called. The torma goes on the altar. But at the beginning of the initiation, so next time you see Gajan Rinpoche giving an initiation or somebody, you know what this is. It's like three little tormas, three lights, and then three things that are, you know, dough that is put in here, and then you make five parts when you by putting it together, and then you put it in, like that. It's for this hungry ghost who was about to eat her children at the time of the Buddha. So then, you know, you throw the tormas out, and she actually said, wow, you know, there are beings coming to eat these things. And she didn't know that she was supposed to, that this was supposed to happen. I never see anything, you know. So I still do it because why? I do it because I trust the masters that this works. You know, also the practice that I did in the lunch break until now is called Chö. It's like you turn your body into everything that people need. You shoot the consciousness out with your, I mean, I can't do it, but it, like with your visualization, you shoot it out, you cut it into pieces, and it's called Chö, cutting, and because that's the thing we're most attached to. And then the body becomes a wish-fulfilling jewel for all sentient beings. It's a wonderful practice, you know. It prepares the mind to freely give when there's nothing to give yet, because the body afterwards is still there and is still whole and all this. So these are these two practices. But yeah, it's very Tibetan. I don't know if in psychotherapy you could find something similar. Maybe, you know, something that inner child, feeding the inner child. The thing is with feeding demons, also, you know, I see my delusions as demons. What is very beneficial there, I don't identify with it. I would identify with the needy inner child. Whereas if I feed the demons my delusions, I don't identify with them. I think maybe for me, inner child would be too much me, I. Whereas delusions, I have them, they're there. I'm going to feed them so that they can calm down and they're happy and like that. So, huh?
There are evidence. Children sees whatever they see.
They see whatever they see. They don't exist, really, truly, from their own side. The same way as also you don't exist, really, truly, from your own side for me, you know. I see you in a way. I don't see you. I see clothes, I see socks, I see a watch, I see a chain, I see hair, I see teeth, I see eyes, but I don't see Leora. Okay? I only see skin, which is covered by cloth. And I say, I know Leora. I see Leora. I don't even see the inside of her body, which I could see with my eyes if we cut her open. So we see, again, we see what my mind is seeing. That's what I see. And for me, there's nothing else but that. So also the way that, you know, we think this is the mistake we're making. We think that we human beings, because we can touch each other, we can see each other, we exist really. All these other realms, they don't exist because that's just fantasy. That's just when people are a bit cuckoo or whatever, you know. How do we know? We don't know. So then there's very precise things like how to do like this Markala practice, the sur, you know, when you do the hindering spirits. When you do Lama Chöpa, every time the plate is going out, this goes for both. This goes for the hungry ghost, but also for the protectors who usually never get anything so that they don't get jealousy. And you know, it's really nice. I mean, one thing is, I know, like, I would never explain that to somebody in a beginner's course, okay, because it's like, so there's a practice which is called 100 Torma offering. Okay? So you make 150 little balls, and then you offer it to different categories, always to the Buddhas and the Yidams and the Buddhas first. Always the first thing goes for them. And then different categories, then, you know, the protectors, the dakinis, da-da-da, you go like in the merit field. At the end, then for all sentient beings, of course, for all six realms. And at the end, you have a bowl where it's only 8 bowls and not 10. And you offer that for the beings who are too weak and too shy or who have come late. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful. You even think about these people who are not like this, because usually these demons, they are like that, you know. And you tell them, the ones who are like that, you tell them, please be satisfied, be satisfied. Please don't fight. Look, there's enough for everybody. Do not worry. You'll get as much as you want like this, so to calm them down. It's all about calming. All these practices is to subdue, is to calm. Yeah? Okay? So if you want to start doing sur practice, I mean, you would really need initiation for that, but I mean, not the sur initiation, but some initiation, because for the sur, you have to generate yourself as Kashyapani, as a deity. Huh? Not for the sur also. Yeah, you did with me. You can do, but if you do it on your own, Kashyapani. But it's okay. If you have one, I think it's okay. Because you see, again, it's all about understanding emptiness. It's all about stopping to believe this exists because I can touch it, I can see it, other things don't exist. It's all about making our minds more subtle, more open, more not so, you know, this is reality. So then you dissolve everything into emptiness and you arise in the body of Kashyapani, which is a Buddha. Because when a Buddha feeds these beings, then it's much more powerful than if an ordinary being for them. So it's like, it's very profound, you know, it has a lot of aspects, these kinds of practices. A lot of aspects, which you discover slowly, slowly on your own by doing them. By doing them and reading commentaries, yeah? Mm-hmm. Well, you see, the Gelugs, again, they have to do it better, more complicated, with this whole thing, what to do. So I do it like that. I like to do it like that. I like to make that mixture for them. I like it. I have time. So why should I do it in a more quicker way? Yeah. 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 Exactly. You know, when you do chö and you have horrible dreams of dying and all the bad, they say, wow, great, this is working. You know, if you have beautiful, peaceful dreams and, that's a, you know. Because you want to purify your negative karma very quickly. But, you know, then also how I am, we had this before I came here, we had this chö retreat, which is in a forest, so you go outside, you know, you go and practice outside. That's where I got the tick. So I had it, you know, a day later when I come home, the retreat finished, I get home, I see a tick on my leg. What's the first thing I do? I take the tick off. You know, then I thought, yeah, look at you. You know, you're sitting there in the forest, chanting, singing, all this, come, 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 drink my blood, eat my flesh, blah, blah, blah. Then there's this little thing who wants a bit of your blood and you take it off. I took it off because in Switzerland we have, what's it called, Lyme disease because of the ticks. And about, I can't remember, 10% they give you Lyme disease, which is really bad disease. It affects your brain. borreliosis and your body and all this. So that was what I was afraid of. I wasn't afraid of giving him my blood, but I was afraid of that. So I thought, okay. So this is why we do it in the meditation first, until we're really ready. Okay, I get borreliosis, who cares? Doesn't matter, it's my karma. But I need to be happy to be able to do that. You see what I mean? So again, it brought me back where I am, you know. I'm very happily offering my body and all this if it's not really true, kind of, you know. But this is how to prepare. This is how to prepare the mind to be able to give the body at one point happily, like it says in the Bodhicaryavatara. I think, like you give now away a place of vegetables. And this whole thing is about seeing our eye, seeing our ego, and cutting through it. Okay. Okay, so that's it, we can stop here. I think tomorrow we can finish. Oh, huh? Well, these other points are pretty simple, I think. Huh? Not simple to practice, but simple to understand. So tomorrow we'll look at what the four powers are. Or maybe we can do that, because it quickly. So, yeah, but it's 3 minutes to five anyway, still. We'll do number four. Because I think that's good to know. Okay? So it goes, train in the five powers. The five powers themselves are the great vehicles, precepts on the transference of consciousness. Cultivate these paths of practice. So the five powers are intention, like, you know, it all has to do with bodhicitta, okay? So here is like the intention not to let disturbing emotions control your mind anymore. Or it can be motivational, so you can call it, sometimes called motivation. Then the power of the white seed. Is creating virtues. It's just called the white seed. Creating virtues, like with the holy objects especially, or with the poor and the sick, or with the Dharma group, offering your being a volunteer, helping the Dharma to flourish. In your country where you are, that's always the best way of creating virtue, like making it possible for other people to enjoy the Dharma when you help physically, actively, you know. Then I know a lot of people, they don't have time, but we can also sometimes make a little bit of time, because that's the biggest problem in the Dharma groups, not finding volunteers. It's really amazing, you know. Here we have these wonderful teachings. I'm not talking about you guys, because I know that many of you help. But we have these wonderful teachings on bodhicitta. Then it comes by actively really able doing something, and then we don't. But it's not you who should hear this, because all of you are, I know, quite involved. Most of you. Not all of you. Most of you. You know, like, to really be part of the group, this is the best way to be part of a group, is to become a volunteer. So that would be a white seed. And a white seed, as you know, with the Buddhas and the Bodhisattvas, we don't really know. Do they receive these fruits or not? Or do I get married or do I not get married? But if you work together as a volunteer, you see what you know, you see a result. So then we're still on the level where we do need a result, actually. Yeah. So that would be creating the white seed. No, we're talking about the five powers. Yeah. The four practices were accumulating virtues, but it's the white seed is the same, okay? It goes in there also. No, it's outside. Intention, motivation. And here the motivation is not to let the negative emotions control your mind. Huh? Yeah, coming. This is coming. It's not yet.
White seed.
And white seed and fermentation is different. Oh, you know, they also, the order is very often is different. It doesn't really matter so much with the order, okay? The white seed. Then the power of repudiation, sometimes it's called, or rejection. The power of rejection. Rejecting what? What do we reject? What do we reject? The self-cherishing. Every time we see it, we go, wow, I saw you now. I will not follow you anymore. You know, this is what we're rejecting. Then the power of prayer. You know, use power of prayer. Prayer. Use prayers for us and all others to have bodhicitta and to attain enlightenment. And then the power of familiarity. Making yourself familiar with it, so then it becomes a habit to do these things. So these are the five powers during lifetime. And then when it continues to say, the five powers themselves are the great vehicles, precept on the transference of consciousness, cultivate these paths of practice. So there's the power at the time of, the five powers at the time of death. The fifth one we had, familiarization is the fifth one. Okay, intention, white seed, the power of rejection or repudiation is the third, power of prayer or aspirations also, and then the power of familiarization is the fifth. They're almost the same at the time of death. Huh? They're almost the same, but they mean a little bit different. Like the white seed at the time of death would be the courage to die. Like everybody dies, why not me, for example? That creates, that makes the mind relax, creates a lot of virtue. Taking refuge and applying the four opponent powers. Think it is okay to die. Then the power of motivation or intention. The intention never to be separated from bodhicitta in future lives. You know, if you can die with this thought, no matter where I'm going to be reborn, may I meet the Buddha Dharma again, may I be able to continue to practice bodhicitta, and may I be, wherever I am reborn, may I be able to be of benefit to others. That kind of intention at the time of death. That really puts the mind in a good channel to maybe then end up in a place like this. Then here's the third one is again what we're rejecting. We're rejecting, again, same thing, self-cherishing or negative emotions in general. Power of prayer would be similar, like never to be separated from bodhicitta in all my lives and to be able to destroy the self-cherishing. Like, you know, this last verse, yeah? In all my lives, never be separated from perfect gurus, enjoy the magnificent Dharma and quickly attain the state of Ajodhara. And the power of familiarity, this one is you train. You become familiar with the death stages, like these absorptions, the eight absorptions, what happens in your mind when you die. Yeah, what we did, I think we did it in the Lamrim retreat, didn't we? Yeah. And we're going to do it in Ramata Sharon on Monday, talking about how to train for death. And when you lie down on your right side and you close your right nostril. Exactly why, I don't really know. But it also it because it has to do something with the heart. Because at the time of death, the heart has a problem. And so if you let the energy go to the left side, by closing this energy channel here, it somehow helps to die peacefully. So you close your, you lie on your right side, you close your nostril, and you can do Tong Leng if you want by going to sleep through your left nostril. It's the lion's pose. This is how the Buddha died, in that posture. So those are the five powers for at the time of death. It's almost the same as the, as during lifetime, but it really has to do with dying. Okay? Huh? Number four.
The title.
Yeah, because you live and then you die, and then that lifetime is finished. You can practice it again in the next lifetime. I don't know. Here it doesn't say, in German it doesn't say in single lifetime, it says in daily life. So, doesn't mean you're only in this life, but, this is what you do in... Sometimes maybe the translations are not so fortunate. What's the Hebrew? Is it also single? So it's probably being translated from the English and not from the Tibetan. The other English translation that I have says... It's also, this one also says the integrated practice of a single lifetime. That's what you practice in this life, so. I don't know. Ignorance is suffering, what to do? I wish I would know. Okay, so we have 20 minutes break, and then we do Tong Leng meditation. Okay? I'll look in this, you can also go. I look in this book, maybe there is an explanation about the single lifetime.